You are, yes.
I am unmuted. Good. Okay, all right, great. Okay, everyone. As Dad says, it's been a difficult week. Medical issues, a slight operation in hospital. Well, that's probably a bit of an exaggeration, but not by much. A burn a couple of weeks before. And to cap it all, just as we were about to start, I discovered that the Braille machine I'm using had wiped a few of my notes. I haven't lost all of them, but I have lost the first few paragraphs. So do bear with me as we go into this. The Book of Joshua is a tricky book, quite simply because it seems so different to what we hear in Jesus. This is the people of Israel coming in and taking the land of Israel, or Canaan as it was known then, and taking it for themselves. They invade, they fight, they kill people. Do they commit genocide? Some people have said they did. And people say, could we not just ignore this bit? Could we just focus on the New Testament? But the fact is, Joshua and Jesus have the same name, more or less. Listen to the Hebrew. Yehoshua, Joshua. Yeshua, Jesus. They're almost completely identical. And people in the New Testament see Joshua as a hero. This kind of contradiction people insist is there is not one that the Bible writers would have recognized, or indeed the Bible readers of the first century AD. So let's go into Joshua and try to get this idea of what it's all about. Context is Moses, the man of God, the man who led Israel out of Egypt through the desert, was meant to lead them into the promised land, has died. God has told him he won't lead the people into the promised land. Joshua is going to have to do it. Now, the whole point of Joshua, and I want you to make a note whenever you come across this, is to see if you can work out how many times it's mentioned, is that God keeps the promises he makes to the people of Israel. Lots of people try to say they forfeited it, they broke it. The Jewish people are no longer in God's favor now. But the whole point of Joshua is God is faithful. But there's always an option here. There's always a point we have to keep. You have to keep the law which God has made with you. You can't expect him just to give you what you want, no matter how you behave. And this is what God says to Joshua in chapter 1. In chapter 1, Joshua is commissioned. He's told Moses is dead. It's time for you to lead these people into the promised land. What a horrible thought. Not only does he have to lead the people into the promised land they've not been in before, he has to try to fill Moses' shoes. He has to prove he is as good as or better than Moses. Anyone who has had to step into the shoes of someone who was popular and someone who did well in a church, in a business, in any kind of group, will know what it feels like when you're trying to take on this role and you feel like you're not wanted. Because even if you are wanted, you're not the person who they used to have. Any political party, when a strong character like Margaret Thatcher or Tony Blair, or it'll be Boris Johnson when he steps down from the Tory party, it's the end of an era. And the next leader he just isn't the same, or she just isn't the same. And it's so clear and it's so obvious. But this is what God says to Joshua as he takes over. Be strong and courageous, starting at verse 6, chapter 1, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their forefathers to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Do not let this book of the law depart from your mouth. Meditate on it day and night, so you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and very courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will go with you wherever you go. People who know anything from the book of Joshua have probably heard the verse on meditating on the book of the law and being strong and being courageous. So for the rest of the chapter, Joshua gets the people ready to go into the promised land. They're lining up. They're preparing to move in. Just like Moses told the people to get ready to go into the promised land, Joshua is now doing the same thing. And he is told to be strong and courageous and to prosper. You keep the commandments I gave you, and you meditate on the law, this book of the law, day and night. Now, when he says meditate, he doesn't mean pray. He doesn't mean think. He doesn't mean meditate in the way, say, a Buddhist or a guru from a Hindu religion would have you meditate. He means read it aloud, say it aloud, repeat it, make it a part of your life. This is very Jewish. Even though Jewish people today don't quite see it the same way, they still meditate on the word of God. They still read it. They still know it. It's not the same faith anymore. There are many, many changes they've made, many traditions they followed they shouldn't have done. But this is good practice. Even at the time of Jesus, Jewish people had taken this command seriously. They knew the Torah by the time they were five. And they could probably repeat the Bible to you in the same way that some fans of Grey's Anatomy or Casualty or EastEnders could tell you all about the characters if you just mention one of them and all their backstory. Right, chapter two. This is interesting for two reasons. First, the spies go to spy out the land and they come back to say, oh, the people of Jericho, oh, they're terrified of us. They're shaking in their shoes. Don't you be frightened of them. And that's significant because when Moses sent the spies out some years ago, 40 years ago, they came back and said, oh, this land is far too dangerous. We can't possibly go in there. There are giants. I'm frightened of giants. But here, Joshua is told, they've heard about God and they're scared. In fact, Rahab, the prostitute, which means she would be an outcast and looked down on and taken advantage of and exploited by everybody, has decided she'd be better off throwing in her lot with the people of Israel rather than remaining loyal to the people of Jericho, the Canaanites. And because of that, this story, which just seems like a nice story, shows Gentiles can come into Israel if they want to, if they're prepared to acknowledge God. And Rahab, as we will later see, is one of the people marked as someone Jesus was descended from. Chapter three, over the river. It's just like the Red Sea. In a complete replay of the Red Sea, the people cross Jordan at the worst possible time. They cross it in the spring at Passover time when the winter rains have swollen the river and it's very difficult to cross. Well, they probably could still have done it, but it's a lot easier to do it in autumn when the river's very shallow and you can just wade across. And yet again, God performs a miracle so that people cross on dry land. Moses did it. Joshua's doing it. The people are doing it. The only difference is where before they had a cloud or a pillar of fire to guide them, this time they have the Ark of the Covenant. The priests stand in the water, the people go round them, the Ark is there, a sign of God as their king leading the way. And they stay slightly back from him because he is still God. They spend 3 days getting ready before crossing the river, just like they spent 3 days preparing for Mount Sinai. And once they're over, they build an altar to remind themselves that this is what they were to do. So now they are in the promised land. They celebrate the Passover. On the first day of there in the land, they eat the Passover, unleavened bread, roasted grain, and the manna they've been living on for 40 years in the desert stops. They're looking forward into the promised land. They're looking back to everything they've been and everything that God has done for them. Now, if I can just pretend to be a government official during the COVID pandemic, Chris, can we have our first slide, please? Okay, this map will show what the people of Israel get up to and where they conquer. So we start with Jericho. While they're about to attack Jericho, Joshua has an encounter with a man who says he's the captain of God's army. He's not on the side of Israel. He's not on the side of the Canaanites. He's the captain of God's army. There's always a picture which is bigger than us. We live in a society that says, what's in it for me? What do I get? What can I have? How do I fit in? There's a bigger picture we're not aware of. And that's what the captain of God's army shows, as well as another replay with Moses. He tells Joshua to remove his shoes while they speak because they're standing on holy ground. That's in chapter 5. So, chapter 6. Who's heard the story of Jericho where the walls fell down? All of you? Yeah, I thought as much. There's a big argument about what this means. Did all the walls of Jericho really fall down? How could that happen by just marching around it 7 times for 7 days, then 7 times on one full day, blowing trumpets and yelling your head off? Some professors, including John Goldingday, my main advisor on the Old Testament through his books, has argued it didn't happen at all. This is all hyperbole to prove a point. Now, I don't actually believe that. I think that's going a bit far, especially because if Jericho really was a ruin when the people of Israel came along, as he claims, how does the Rahab story fit in? It is true that Joshua isn't regular history as we'd understand it, and it is proving points. And the point that's being referred to here is dead right. They took it because God helped them to take it, not because they were brilliant warriors and brilliant fighters. But at the same time, there almost certainly was a city of Jericho. It did remain in ruins after Joshua took it and cursed it and said, cursed be anyone who rebuilds Jericho until it is rebuilt with tragic consequences. You can read about that in 1 Kings. But at the same time, the idea that it was all the reason Jericho can't have existed, because archaeological evidence doesn't show a city in Joshua's time, is very tenuous at best. It's also possible that only part of the wall fell down. We know one bit of the wall didn't, because otherwise Rahab would have been crushed. She would have been living in the wall. It's possible that only part of it fell down for the Israelites to get in, because the point of the story is God gave the people Jericho, not all the walls of Jericho fell down because the Bible says they did. We have power over things. Now, here comes the first really difficult bit. The city of Jericho is apparently destroyed. Everything in there belongs to God. Everybody in there is killed. Now, we'll get this time and time again. So let's just make this point now. When it says everyone was killed, that's almost definitely not true. And we can know it is, because whenever we hear about other tribes later on, they're always coming back, even when they're supposed to have all been destroyed. The main point of this is that all the plunder is dedicated to God, which means the people don't get any. That would have been unheard of at the time, excuse me, because you're supposed to devote all your plunder to yourself. It's yours. I took it. I found it. It's mine. Instead of which they're told, give it to God. All the nice coins, all the nice clothes, everything is God's. It's not yours. Because God has given you the land. But as we always know with the people of Israel, it doesn't work quite like that. Someone decides they're going to help themselves to some of the plunder. They pinch some of it, and the result is God decides he will not help the Israelites if they aren't going to be obedient. So when they take the city of Ai, now the significance of Ai is the name means ruin. It's a pushover. Anyone should be able to take this. They think it's so simple, they don't even bother sending the whole people up. They send just part of the men up and they're routed. And in a replay of the story of Moses again, Joshua has a faith crisis and says to God, oh, why did we ever go into the promised land? We would have been better off staying on the other side of the Jordan. You sent us here to destroy us. Just like Moses has his crisis and the people have their crisis and say to God, we'd have been better off in Egypt. Nothing changes. But this time the Lord replies, verse 10. The Lord said to Joshua, stand up. What are you doing down on your face? Israel have sinned. They have violated my covenants, which I commanded them to keep. You have taken part of the devoted things. They have stolen. They have lied. They have put them with their own possessions. That is why the Israelites cannot stand against their enemies. They turn their backs and run because they have been made liable to destruction. I will not be with you anymore unless you destroy whatever among you is devoted to destruction. This sounds really harsh, but it raises a question I'm going to ask you now. How much do you like the God of the Old Testament? If the answer is you hate him, that's a problem, because he's the same as the God of the New Testament. But if the answer is you have no problem with him at all, I think you need to rethink what you're looking at. He's a judging God because he is a loving God. Just like Jesus says, anyone who would deny, anyone who does not deny himself, take up his cross and follow me, cannot be my disciple. The same thing's here. And it's fair too. You are either faithful to your spouse or you are not. An alcoholic cannot say, I'll stop drinking, but you have to let me drink on Friday. They have to stop. If the people of Israel are not devoted to God, then they will lose and they will fail. You want to stay in the land? You have to be faithful. Even though you're getting the idea that this may not happen. Okay. Joshua chapter 8, if Chris can follow us on the map again, they take the land, the town of Ai, and in a replay of Moses again, Joshua stands holding his javelin out towards the city until it's destroyed. It becomes a ruin. The town of ruin becomes a ruin. That's very biblical there, very biblical kind of humor. And the king is hung on a tree. In other words, the king is cursed. Do remember again, this is how in those days people would have lived. You lived expecting raiders to come and take your city and having to defend it or having to make a run for it. And again, it's unlikely everyone died. Okay, Joshua 9, the kings of the West are forming up to fight against Israel. But one tribe, the Gibeonites, decide they'd much rather make peace with Israel and trick them into doing so. The point of this story, I think, is that even when you don't quite follow the rules properly, and even when you're tricked, God can still use you. The Gibeonites end up as slaves to the Israelites or forced laborers, but they serve the temple and the tabernacle and the sanctuary. The tabernacle while it's there, the temple in Jerusalem when that is built later. And because the Israelites swore not to kill them, they cannot go back on that oath. Later on in the Bible, Saul tries to do exactly that. He decides that it would be a great idea to kill all of the Gibeonites. And he doesn't quite kill them all, but he kills a lot of them because they're not Israel. And it's in his zealous for Israel. And all he succeeds in doing is making God angry. Another group of people who aren't Israelites may have joined with entirely selfish motives, but they end up working in the sanctuary. And in chapter 10, God is exalted because the Israelites have to go and save the Gibeonites from this alliance. You'll see on the map, which we've got here, the kings of the West and the Western campaign, they took a great many cities and killed a great many kings. We also have the rather troubling song from Joshua. Sun stand still in, to asking the sun not to set in Gibeon and the moon to stand still. So the sun doesn't set and the moon doesn't rise until the Israelites have finished defeating the enemy and killing everyone. Now, this is a poem. This has upset people again, but it is a poem. And it's mentioned as part of a scroll of Tamar, which we don't have. So it's probably just poetry. Just like in an English poem, they say there was much slaughter. Right, chapter 11, first half of the book, basically, almost finished. We get the next northern campaign. So they've gone north now, if Chris can show us that on the map. They take another load of kings and take another load of cities because the Lord is with them. If you're looking at a map of Israel today, essentially what you're looking at is the West Bank. And in Joshua chapter 12, we begin to hear exactly what they've taken. Joshua 12 takes us back, if we can go for the second map now that shows which it, who in Israel gets what. So if we can have the second slide, please. Thank you. We're going back to the tribes of Reuben, Manasseh, and Gad. They settled on the east bank of the Jordan and didn't follow the people over to the west. And we hear exactly what they have and what they don't have. Now, this is pretty dull, and we get a lot more of this in the book, but it's there for a reason. It's there because the people of Israel really prided themselves on knowing who had what and what God gave them. Joshua 13, Caleb. Who's heard of Caleb? The one person who actually trusted in God. It claims he's now 85 and he wants to take his land. Is he really 85? Well, it would be nice to think that, wouldn't it? That if you're 85, you can still be up for fighting and taking land. But no. And hang on. Sorry, I've actually missed a chapter. Joshua 13 is where Joshua is reminded he's getting old. You're getting on. And this is what you haven't taken. You get a whole list of places they still have to take and allocate. So chapter 14, we can go back to Caleb. Caleb, because God keeps his promise, he's asking to be allowed to take land because he was faithful. Joshua blesses him, sends him off, and the land has rest from war. Chapter 15, Caleb takes his territory. He takes Hebron. The tribe of Judah takes Hebron and the area surrounding Jerusalem. For a while, they even take Jerusalem, but it's not part of the capital. We also meet Caleb's daughter, who asks her father for a field and for springs of water in the Negev desert. Just an aside here, I think it's worth remembering. Lots of people think the Bible has a downer on women. Women can't lead the church. Women have to do as they're told. Women have to submit to their husbands. Women have to be good and submissive. Nonsense. Read Joshua chapter 15. This lady asks her father for water in the Negev desert. That gives her influence. Later on, you hear about the daughters of the tribe of Joseph who ask Moses for land of their own because their father had no sons. And Moses takes their side, as does God. And chapter 16 and 17, we're looking at the tribe of Joseph, the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, and what they get. They're not happy. They say, we don't like this land. There are too many people around us and there's forests. But Joshua says, you want more land? You have to take it. For the next few chapters, we hear what all the other tribes get. They make lots, send men out to look at what's around them from the town of Shiloh, where the tabernacle's set up. And we hear what each tribe gets. The tribe of Benjamin. The tribe of Dan. The tribe of Zebulun. The tribe of Naphtali. The tribe of Dan. And if you want to know exactly what each one took, and where their borders are, it's all there on the website. In fulfillment of the promises of God in chapter 20, they allocate cities for where murderers or people, well, we're not murderers, no, people who have committed manslaughter can hide. There was no police force in those days or law enforcement. You had to do what you had to do with your family. So if a member of your family was killed by someone, they would send someone out to kill them. God's justice is being shown and his work is being done. Going back briefly to chapter 8, when the city of Ai is taken, the people of Israel pronounce the blessings and the cursings on the land of Israel. Blessed if this happens. Blessed be someone who does this. Cursed be someone who does that. You can read all about it in the book of Leviticus. The whole point of this and the cities for the killers is that, cities for the killers, it says, I'll say city for those who commit manslaughter, accidental killers, if you like. They're getting exactly what they want, what they were told they had to have. And you actually get in chapter 21, a comment made in verse 43. So the Lord gave Israel all the land he had sworn to their forefathers, and they took possession of it and settled there. The Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their forefathers, and their enemies withstood them. Not one of their enemies withstood them. The Lord handed all that their enemies had over to them. Not one of the Lord's good promises to the house of Israel failed. Every one was fulfilled. In Joshua 21, by the way, is where the Levites, the one tribe who don't have an inheritance of their own, are given cities for their animals, their wives, and their children, because they serve God, but God is their inheritance. Chapter 22, the Reubenites, Gadites, and men of Manasseh have gone home, and there's a dispute with the people of Israel, just like a dispute in churches today, about worship. They've built an altar, and the people of Israel nearly go to war with each other over it because they're convinced it's been done as a blasphemy. But it wasn't. It was so that they could prove the Jordan was not a barrier and they were together as a group. And in chapter 23, Joshua says goodbye. He meets with them in Shechem, where Abraham is buried, runs through everything that had happened to them and why, tells them not to make any covenants or any agreements with the tribes surrounding them, which are still there, because you will see in all of these chapters, when the people of Israel get their inheritance, they could never drive the tribes out. They stayed on. They hung around. And you would think that when Joshua says goodbye and says he's going to die, just like Moses did, that that was the end of the story. But it isn't. In the last chapter, we really are getting there, guys, I promise. Joshua calls the people to Shechem again, and he makes his famous declaration. He says to the people, make up your minds, serve God and throw away the foreign gods, or serve the gods of the land, find another god. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Very famous verse. The people say, oh, we're not stupid. We want to serve Yahweh, the God of Israel. No other God's done for us what he has. And Joshua makes a comment which should really make us think. You are not able to serve the Lord. He is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your rebellion and your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, he will turn and bring disaster on you and make an end of you after he has been good to you. The people promise they will still serve God. Joshua sets up a stone and says, "You're witnesses against yourselves." And then he goes home and he goes to be with the Lord. As a last sign of the promises of God being kept, Joseph's bones, taken from Egypt as he requested, are buried with his family in the tomb of Shechem, as he'd asked many, many years ago, when it seemed impossible they would return to the land of Canaan. And here they are, and the land is theirs. And for all of Joshua's generation, the people serve the Lord. What can we take away from this? God is faithful. God will keep his promises. Even if you are unfaithful, God would still rather keep his promises. But if you misbehave, there are consequences. And many, many years later, into Israel, there appeared a man whose name was Jesus, a name meaning Joshua, who brought salvation to the world. Did the people of Israel keep the promise they made to Joshua? Did they listen to his warning? You are not able to serve the Lord. He is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your rebellion and your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, he will turn and bring disaster on you and make an end of you after he has been good to you. Read on to the book of Judges and discover the answer. Thank you very much.